listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show. I'm Rob Daly. Paris Saint-Germain are French champions again after a 9-0 win over Troyes, with 2 months of the season remaining. We speak to ESPN FC French football correspondent Mark Rodden about their triumph. Edwin van der Sar comes out of retirement at the age of 45. We'll tell you why he made such an impressive return. Bundesliga expert Kevin Hatchard is with us to talk about the 28-year-old manager who might just save Hoffenheim from relegation. Plus, we have the latest from La Liga, Serie A, and a preview of the week's Champions League and Europa League.
This is Football in Europe.
Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you do enjoy the podcast, and tweet us using @FIEPodcast. Alongside me today is Chris Parrott. Chris, you're back from illness.
I am. Yeah, I had the lurky, which I think everyone had.
And that's a commentator's absolute nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, it really was. So basically, it's not just the cold, it was then the worry for 14 days.
Yeah, all that money that you're losing out on. Okay, so Chris, this week we've got lots to get through, the Champions League, Europa League as well. Let's talk about Edwin van der Sar, who made his return to football, came out of retirement at the age of 45 at the weekend. So what? First of all, why did he come out of retirement?
Well, first of all, you say 45, he looks like he's 30 still.
He still looks the same.
His first club didn't have a goalkeeper, basically, in the Dutch 4th division, Noordwijk. And he asked the Dutch FA, he said he was available. The Dutch FA granted him special dispensation to play because they had to register him. So he played and he saved a penalty.
He did save a penalty. The clip's absolutely brilliant and we will tweet that out as well, but he was just such a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, he was.
It's amazing that he was at Fulham for a spell that Fulham had.
Agreed, yeah. And then he went to United, talking about the Champions League, won it, that penalty shootout against Chelsea in the rain in Moscow. When people see the clip, he looks exactly the same as the day he retired from United.
Also this week, Chris, what were you working on the weekend? You were working on the Russian Premier League, commentating on Zenit.
Yeah,
they won.
Yeah, commentating on Zenit. The story is Rostov. We have another Leicester City in the Russian Premier League.
So you texted me in the week and said Russia has its own version of Leicester City. And
yeah.
It's this club called Rostov who are challenging with CSKA Moscow and Zenit for the title.
Yeah, well, Zenit is they hope to challenge for the title.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not been great all season domestically, really, for Zenit. So Rostov survived in the relegation playoff last season. They finished in the bottom four, just stayed up. Kerbin Bedeev, who led Rubin to 2 titles to upset the Zenit Moscow monopoly in Russia, is doing it again with tiny Rostov. They beat CSKA at the weekend 2-0, and it means they're top, same amount of points as CSKA, 9 games to go. And if they were to win it, what a story. If they're to get in the Champions League, the top two go into the Champions League, albeit not the group stage, the second team, what a story would that be? A couple of stats to really put it home, I think. Their squad costs a combined 40 million euros. Hulk costs Zenit 60 million euros. That's one player. And of course, Leonard Slutsky job shares the CSKA job of the Russia national team. And he announced his squad for their 2 upcoming friendlies on Friday. Not one Rostov player was in it. That pretty much did their team talk for them before they won 2-0 because the national team manager leaves them all out and they have a chance to immediately exact revenge over him, and they did so.
That is an absolutely brilliant story. So Rostov played CSKA. Rostov was second, beat them 2-0. Speaking of Midlands comparisons to foreign clubs, Hanover, I commentated on Hanover getting beat by Cologne at the weekend, and they're going down Hanover. They had chances to take the lead in their game. They're actually pretty good in the opening 30 minutes, but they're well adrift to the bottom. So they're the German Aston Villa of the season, so I think they're well down. Leonardo Bittencourt, who used to play for them and Dortmund, scored twice to really, really rub salt into the wounds.
Yeah, I did them against Wolfsburg in their derby.
Oh, the 4-0 loss where Schürrle scored 3.
They were a poor I mean, Schürrle had barely scored in the Bundesliga. He could have had 4, to be honest. One other line from Russia, which was interesting at the weekend. Russian TV, before the Zenit-Rubin game, a long package and discussion on Manuel Pellegrini. Been mentioned to go to Zenit. Andrei Vyas-Burs is standing down at the end of the season. Pellegrini's leaving City. And they were deep in discussion. My Russian is poor, to say the least, but his name was very much on the lips of everyone there as the potential successor.
Do you think he'd go there? I mean, he's... He's in the twilight of his career. He could probably get one more. I mean, we're talking about him getting one more big paid, highly paid job.
Exactly. I mean, he's achieved so much in Spain, which would be the natural destination, I guess. Could he go to Zenit for 1 or 2 years? Yeah, I think he could. A lot will depend on where they finish this season, because, as I mentioned, they're 6 points behind Rostov and CSKA.
So not qualifying for the Champions League.
Would that impact Pellegrini going there? It might do.
Okay, so let's turn our attention now to Bundesliga football.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
Joining us on the show now is German football expert Kevin Hatchard. Kevin, thanks for coming back on Football in Europe.
I'm delighted to return.
That sounded a bit sarcastic, was it?
No, it's been a long exile and I'm back and raring to go. Never sarcastic, never.
Never. Let's talk about the 28-year-old head coach who might be saving Hoffenheim from the drop. How is Julian Nagelsmann getting victories for Hoffenheim, at home in particular, since taking charge a few weeks ago?
Well, it's been an absolutely extraordinary turnaround. They're still struggling away from home. They got battered 5-1 away by Stuttgart. But what was impressive about that, and what I think kind of gives us a bit of an insight into how he's doing this at the moment, is that he really didn't panic. He didn't slate the players. He just said, look, it was a bad day. We go again, we'll return to training and we'll prepare for the next game. He was very calm about it. I think Huub Stevens, his predecessor, would have gone absolutely ballistic at a performance like that, and his team conceding 5 goals. So he's brought a kind of calmness. He's brought a little bit of freedom to the way they play, because Stevens is very much a defensive coach, and that has worked for him in the past couple of seasons when he's dragged Stuttgart out of the mire a couple of seasons running. But I think he's just taken the handbrake off. They've got attacking players who suddenly have found their form. Marc Uth, who's found his sharpness in front of goal, and he scored some very important goals for them actually in home games. He got a winner against Augsburg. He also got a couple of goals against Mainz. But another player that's really contributed is the on-loan Leicester striker, Andre Kramaric. He's done a superb job, scored a really good goal against Wolfsburg in that win at the weekend, and you can see the confidence he's got, because Kevin Volland missed a penalty at the weekend and Kramaric was determined to take it, so he's obviously feeling that he's an important member of the squad already. So they've still got problems away from home. They've still got a hell of a lot of work to do to drag themselves out of trouble. But I think because they've managed to harness the energy of the home crowd and get a bit of form going, I think they've got a chance.
Kev, at the other end, Dortmund beat Mainz 2-0. Mainz, who of course beat Bayern away from home a couple of weeks ago. Marco Reus and Shinji Kagawa got the goals. But it was a very sad day in the end, a tragic day, and an odd atmosphere too.
Yeah, it was. It was a very strange backdrop to the game, because not only one fan, but two fans suffered heart attacks at the very start before the game. And sadly, one of those fans that did suffer a heart attack died, an 80-year-old Dortmund fan. And that led to the second half almost being played in total silence, because that news had spread around the Signal Iduna Park. And at the end of the game, there was a raucous rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone. And both fans, both sets of fans paid tribute to, sadly, the fan who passed away. So it was an emotional day and a really sad day in the end. On the pitch, Dortmund played well, actually. They missed a lot of chances, but they got the job done. Mainz, not quite as resolute as they had been away to Bayern Munich. They didn't play a different formation as they had done at the Allianz Arena. They deployed a five-man back line, which frustrated Bayern, but they went for a flat back four. It didn't really work, and I think Dortmund were worthy winners in the end. But in the end, football wasn't the main story.
Yeah, absolutely not. We actually have some audio from the stand. So this is what it sounded like inside Signal Iduna Park. That sort of eerie silence, and you can probably get an idea from this. Well, that audio coming from German-based football journalist Alex Chaffer, and I messaged him about the game. He said it was so eerie, people were whispering around us because you could hear everything being said in the stands. And that was during the game, and Dortmund games are notoriously noisy. And he said it's hard to put into words just how strange it was. Borussia Dortmund faced Spurs in the Europa League with that 3-0 lead. Me and Chris will talk that, about that later, because that looks done and dusted, to be honest, Kev. But Bayern, I saw a headline in Bild, so it looks like David Alaba is agreeing a new deal, something like 11 million euros a year, which would be a great boost for them, because this week, Juve, with that 2-2 scoreline from the first leg, given how Bayern performed at the weekend in beating Werder Bremen 5-0, how do you see them doing against the Italian champions?
It's a big test. Juve are very defensively solid domestically, but of course they weren't in that game in Turin in the first leg, and Bayern, I think, are still annoyed at themselves that they let a winning position slip. They were really, really good in the first hour or so of that game, and then it rather got away from them, and the defensive problems that they have were exposed towards the end of that game. Of course, they've been playing guys like Joshua Kimmich out of position. He's done an extraordinary job, bearing in mind that he has virtually no experience at this level, and he's playing completely out of position. But in the end, that was always going to catch up with them to some extent. However, they've been so good at the Allianz Arena. They've won every game apart from that game against Mainz. They didn't even play that badly against Mainz. It was just one of those games where the opposition play an unbelievable game and somehow managed to nick something at the end. So I don't think they'll be too disturbed by that. They will feel that they are the favourites. Robert Lewandowski, still in great form, was rested at the weekend but still managed to come on and score. Thomas Müller with a couple of goals. They have so much firepower, and I just think that they will have enough to edge out Juventus, because they were so dominant in that first half in Turin, and if they get anywhere near that level of performance, I think that'll be enough to take them through.
Another quick story from Germany about Max Kruse. So Max Kruse, the Wolfsburg striker, likes a bet. He likes a bit of poker, and generally in mid-season he'll go out to Las Vegas and have a bit of a game out there. But during a tournament in Berlin, after a tournament in Berlin, which he played without the club's permission, he left 75,000 euros in the back of a taxi.
So, as you do,
and now there's talk that Wolfsburg, for playing this tournament without permission, might fine him another 25,000 euros.
Just to rub salt into the wounds. This is a problem for him, actually, because it's the kind of issue, extracurricular issue, if you like, that's dogged him for a while. And we know he's an excellent player, but I think Jogi Löw, the Germany boss, has always been a little bit wary of Kruse because of his off-the-field issues.
Right.
And he's an incredibly talented player. He's taken a while to get going at Wolfsburg, and I think he does need to fully focus, because if he wants to make a big impact in the Euros in the summer, and there's so much competition for places, of course, if he wants to do that, he's going to have to fully focus and kind of pack it in, really, because it's that reputation that I think has held him back to an extent. We know how good he's been on the field. He was superb for Gladbach in the last couple of seasons. It's not really happened for him this campaign. And I just think if he can fully focus, he could be a world beater, but I just don't know if it's going to happen.
Kev, one on Harvard Nordveit, the Borussia Mönchengladbach central defender, who's been pretty good this season, and the club have confirmed he's moving to England. They've even said specifically to England at the end of the season, because his contract expires. Where do you see Nordveit going?
I thought this was a really interesting one, because I think they'll be a little bit disappointed they've not been able to keep him, because he's actually stepped up this season when they needed him, because Granit Xhaka has been suspended quite a bit this season, having been sent off 3 times. They had a bit of a hole in midfield with Christoph Kramer going back after his 2-season loan spell to Bayer Leverkusen. So he's really come up with a consistency that he hadn't necessarily showed in previous seasons. I think any team that wants a combative central midfielder, that he has a bit of versatility, he can play in the back four. He's a very steady guy. He's not massively talented on the ball, although he has got a great shot from distance. So, you know, you could see somebody like a Leicester City, who have made the kind of sensible signings of that ilk. You could see somebody like that going for him. I don't think any of the top or supposed top teams would be interested in him. But I think, you know, somebody like a Southampton or a Leicester, I think, could make a move for him.
And a quick final one, Kev. Sad events in Darmstadt this week. So Darmstadt were promoted to the Bundesliga in the summer. And have been overachieving, if you like, because they're a very small club with a small budget. But you commentated on them at the weekend, but the game wasn't really the story with Darmstadt. Further sad news from Germany.
Unfortunately, yes, because Johnny Heimes, who was a massive fan of Darmstadt and had become pretty much an inspirational figure there, he sadly lost his brave battle against cancer at the age of 26, and the club took the time to mourn his passing on Saturday. The players wore wristbands, which had a phrase that had become not only synonymous with Heimes' battle against cancer, but also Darmstadt's battle to get through the divisions. It was, you must keep fighting, all is not lost. And the players really took that to heart. Marco Seiler, one of the Darmstadt players, the guy with the massive beard, as you may know him, he's actually got it tattooed on his arm, that phrase, and it was seen very much as a driving force behind them getting promoted. So he was a very important part of the club, and very sad that he's now left us.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us again on the podcast.
Cheers, guys.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Chris, let's look at Italian football. We'll talk about the league in a moment. But Antonio Conte, as of Monday morning when we generally record the podcast, today Antonio Conte is expected to announce he will step down as Italy head coach at the end of the European Championships. Why? What's the latest on
because
that?
He's heading to Chelsea as their new coach, which has been widely reported. It's understood that he's already met Roman Abramovich, already rumours about the likes of Rajan Nainggolan being on his wish list for the summer, the Roma midfielder, maybe Miralem Pjanic too. So Conte to Chelsea has been expected, I think, and may well be confirmed by the time that this podcast makes its way out.
3-year contract, people are saying, for the 46-year-old, £4.75 million a year after tax.
Yep.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby, but I always think if you're going to pay anybody in this cash-rich game of football, then pay your manager. He is a pretty important cog.
Some other names linked with Chelsea as a result. Paul Pogba, unsurprisingly, worked together at Juve. Cavani, Higuain, Mauro Icardi, Marquinhos at PSG, and Arturo Vidal, who's at Bayern. Okay, let's look at Serie A itself now, because the likes of Juve, Roma and Napoli keep on winning the top three. Roma got a 2-1 success away at Udinese. Edin Dzeko actually on the score sheet. Florenzi with the winner. Juve beat Sassuolo 1-0 on the Friday night game. Dybala with the winner. So that keeps them 3 points clear at the top, but there's a major talking point from that game, Chris.
Yeah, another record for Buffon. He's overtaken the great Dino Zoff in terms of minutes not conceding for Juventus, a 10th straight clean sheet. Amazing. Zoff says himself, couldn't have been a better goalkeeper to have beaten my record. And he's 4 minutes away from the all-time Serie A record, which is currently held by Sebastiano Rossi from Milan in the early 90s, when they had that incredible back four with Baresi and Costa Curta and Maldini, etc. So 4 minutes against Torino in the Turin derby, and you'll probably see, well, I don't know, because Gigi Buffon's pretty cool, but if it gets to the 4 minute mark, maybe he'll do like a little jog around his penalty area.
Buffon or Van der Sar?
Buffon.
Yeah.
And actually, I think when you look back at it in 10, 20 years, if he doesn't win the Champions League, he'll be right up there with the greatest players never to have lifted the European Cup.
Napoli, meanwhile, won 1-0 at Palermo. Gonzalo Higuain with the goal. So that keeps them within 3 points of Juve. Higuain scoring a penalty. Palermo, Chris, we talked with Adam Summerton about them before, about how they've changed managers, I don't know how many times, but they've changed manager again.
Yeah.
So do you want to explain this a little bit?
Well, good luck, Walter Novellino, who's the new man. If you put Palermo into Google, the third thing that comes up is Palermo managers. They've sacked Beppe Iacchini again, got rid of him in November, then got rid of four managers and brought him back in February, then got rid of him in March. It's like a bad version of Craig David, isn't it?
Well, because they're all still contracted to the club, they'll generally bring them back in again. I mean, yeah. In terms of their league status now as well, they're getting perilously close to relegation and just above the drop zone by a point.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Maurizio Zamperini is the man involved in all of this. He took over the club, brought them back to Serie A in the early noughties, after 30 years out of the top flight, I think. So that's his argument. Look, I did that. I can do what I want. But it's gone on for years, this. They go through at least a couple of managers a season. There's a great quote from Giuseppe Sannino, who had that spell at Watford. He's been on the wrong end of it, and basically said it's really hard to get a rent, somewhere to rent in Palermo, because everyone knows you're going to be there for, like, you know, 6 months before you go. So they don't even want to give you a house.
Oh, that's really great.
But it's just, it's basically his mood swings. And I don't know, there might be a reason that they're battling relegation, because as we all know, if you have that many coaches, I don't see how the players can understand what on earth they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And a quick look at La Liga. Atletico have got a 3-0 win against Deportivo La Coruña. Antoine Griezmann on the score sheet in that game. Real Madrid needed a late goal in the 89th minute to beat Las Palmas by 2-1. Sergio Ramos was sent off. So how many red cards is that, Chris?
It's more than 50. It's 20. In his career.
That's impressive.
That's more than a season if it's three games. Yeah, it might not always be three games, but Sergio, come on.
He actually also scored in that game. Real Madrid went 1-0 up. Then Las Palmas scored with 3 minutes to go. Very cruel for a team that are trying to avoid getting drawn back into a relegation battle before the winner on the 89th minute from Casemiro. Barcelona in action against Arsenal this week in the Champions League. Arsenal losing in the FA Cup to Watford. Mm. I mean, things going so badly for Arsene Wenger at the moment. And Barcelona won 6-0 at the weekend against Getafe. Neymar got a couple. Munir scored again, actually, an own goal. Turan and Messi scored. But this penalty issue with Barcelona goes on.
Yeah, well, I think because they're so good, we have to desperately try and not just give Arsenal some hope, but give anybody in European football some hope, that the one thing they can't do is take penalties. We've discussed this. They've all tried it, the front three. I think Neymar and Suarez have missed them, but Messi consistently misses penalties, which is...
Yeah, he missed another. I didn't see this penalty. It was a bad one.
Well, I mean, the keeper guessed the right way, but his whole body, as he walked up to take it or ran up to take it, suggested he was going to go to the goalkeeper's left, and he did. It was one of those that you thought, I know where he's going, watching it. And the keeper saved it. And Barcelona are absolutely phenomenal. If he missed against Bayern or someone like that in the Champions League, it could easily come back to haunt them at some stage. And you just wonder. A shootout, yeah. I mean, it's very possible, but it's the one thing they can't do.
8 missed penalties in La Liga this season.
I mean, that's
a new record. So.
Yeah, and also, given that they're going to break new records in terms of the front three, how many goals they've scored, even though Messi was injured for a long spell, maybe if you put those 8 goals on top, like, they're missing out on some...
Exactly. Okay, so that's the latest from La Liga. Let's turn our attention now to the recrowned champions of France.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Joining us on the podcast now is ESPN FC French football correspondent Mark Rodden. Mark, let's start with PSG, French champions again. And I think it'd be fair to say, you know, with 2 months to go and considering the manner of the weekend scoreline, they did it in style.
Certainly did. First team in 30 years in Ligue 1 to score 9 goals. Zlatan Ibrahimovic getting 4 in Ligue 1 for the first time. He did score 4 against Anderlecht in the Champions League in one game a few years ago. Fantastic performance from him as well. Okay, the opposition wasn't great, but check out the goals. Some of them were absolutely brilliant. Left foot, right foot, volley from outside the box. The last one in the very last minute as well. Sprinted from one penalty area to the other, showing no signs of fatigue or age being a factor, smashed it in left-footed. Exceptional stuff from him. Is it a surprise that PSG are champions? Absolutely not. You look at the other teams, you got a question, a couple of them. Monaco closer to the relegation zone than they are to PSG, even though they're second in the table. A few teams have underperformed in Ligue 1 this season, that's for sure, but no surprise really when PSG have a budget of, you know, close to 500 million euros and only three other teams are over 100 million euros that they're, you know, winning the league every year. And, you know, beating a team like Troyes 9-0 is absolutely no surprise either. PSG, one defeat in 30 matches, Troyes bottom of the table, 2 wins in 30, Their budget is just over 20 million. You know, it doesn't look good for the league. It's great for PSG. You know, it's not a great thing for the league. And if anything, a result like that would say to me that maybe Ligue 1 should be 18 teams rather than 20, because there always seems to be at least one that's cut adrift from the rest and is really showing up. What PSG are doing isn't unprecedented, because Lyon won 7 in a row at the start of the century. They also won, there was three years in a row, I think, they won the league by more than 10 points. But the worry is that PSG are smashing all their records. You know, I think the biggest margin for Lyon was 17 points. Having said that, you've got to give a lot of credit to Laurent Blanc as well. He's really got his players concentrated on every game. It must be hard. Yes, they're being paid a lot of money. They're professionals, but it must be hard to get motivated for certain league matches. And PSG just showing no signs of letting up at all.
Yeah, and in particular, Ibrahimovic, who you've already mentioned. After the game, Mark, he spoke with, I think it was a beIN Sport journalist, about his future, because his contract expires at the end of the season. He said, "For the moment, I will not be at PSG next season. I still have a month and a half left here, and it might be 2 months longer if they reach the Champions League final." And he also said that he would stay if they effectively replaced the Eiffel Tower with a statue of him. I mean, I felt, Mark, that maybe he was going to stay, and maybe PSG was the best place for him for another year.
You know, only last week after the Chelsea game, he said, "Look, 2 months to go, haven't talked to anyone about anything." And that's what the president, PSG president Nasser Al-Khelaifi, said as well. "Look, we'll discuss this later." I think he just doesn't want any distractions and wants to really push and try and win the Champions League and prove a lot of doubters wrong. A lot of people writing him off at the start of the season. He's got 27 goals in Ligue 1, 11 assists. People say he couldn't score in the knockout stages of the Champions League. He scored in both legs against Chelsea. If PSG win the Champions League, it's a big ask. That would probably be a great way to go out. If they don't, maybe he feels they're a club that's well-placed to challenge again.
Let's talk about Toulouse, Mark, because they've had a change in manager and a woeful season, but do you think things might have turned for them a little bit?
Well, big derby win against Bordeaux, 4-0. Pascal Duprat, as the new manager, had a bit of a health scare last week, actually, so this was His first game on the bench, first game in charge at home.
What was that? What was, because I saw that it was his first game in the dugout.
They didn't really give too many details on it. So he seems to be okay again and got a reaction. You know, there's plenty of studies out there, I guess, that say that, you know, a new manager coming in can have a big impact over, particularly over the first couple of months. Helped, it's got to be said, by playing a pretty awful Bordeaux side. Two penalties, a sending off, the keeper was terrible. Just everything that could go wrong did go wrong for Willy Sagnol's side. He was watching from the stands. He's serving a suspension for the next couple of games. And Bordeaux, only 5 points off the relegation zone. Have to be careful now.
Let's look at Belgium as well, Mark, because that's a league that you cover. I saw quotes from West Brom's assistant manager, Dave Kemp. He says they do want to sign, they're interested in, certainly, Ghent's striker, Laurent Depoitre, a player who has impressed for me, even in the Champions League this season. And today, Mark, I saw as well that Matt Sells, the goalkeeper, who's been outstanding, has been linked with Southampton. What do you think to those two players? I mean, how do you think they get on in the Premier League?
Laurent Depoitre keeps proving people wrong, because he's a guy who didn't come through a club academy system, went and did his studies in civil engineering, just played football as much as a hobby as anything else up until a few years ago, only discovered the top flight in Belgium a couple of seasons ago with Ostende. Earned a move to Ghent and, you know, 13 goals in his first season. They won the title. I think it's 12 in 27 matches this season in the league. Has forced his way into the Belgium squad, got a goal against Andorra, and has proved himself in the Champions League as well, you know, helping Ghent get through to the last 16. I know people in France were very impressed with him and got a goal against Zenit to get them through to the last 16. Big, burly striker, the type of guy who, if he's off his game, can look pretty poor, to be honest, you know, which was kind of the case against Wolfsburg in the first leg.
It's safe to say he's not a Sadio Berahino replacement, is he?
No, people are billing him as that. He's a completely different player. You know, he's a late bloomer, as they say, and I've been watching him a lot over the last 2 years. He's really improved. His hold of play has improved. His movement, the timing of his runs are much better, and he's deceptively quick as well. He's, you know, he said that, you know, Premier League or the Bundesliga is where he wants to go. He has a year left on his contract. There is a bit of a dispute with Ghent at the moment. You know, they are saying they were going to make him their best paid player. He knows, or he says, you know, that's not the case. That's not the offer I got. I'm still on the contract that I was on when I was, you know, brought in as a third choice attacker from Ostende a couple of seasons ago. Started last season actually on the bench. You know, so he's obviously, his status has changed. And because he came to professional football quite late, he feels that maybe, you know, this is a chance to move. He hasn't ruled out staying, but, you know, probably fans will have to be patient. But he is a good physical striker that has, you know, some of the attributes required to shine in the Premier League. And to be honest, if you can do it in the Champions League, why can't you do it in the Premier League?
And final one, Mark, what is the status of the Belgian Pro League at the minute? Because we're coming to the latter part of the season when we have the playoff system. So it might be worth explaining that a little bit.
How long have I got? So top six go into a championship playoffs. Eight teams after that go into a mid-table playoffs, two groups, with a chance of getting a Europa League place at the end of that. There has been a change to the relegation. So there was a relegation playoff last season. This time it's just one team that goes down. The 16th team was Leuven, relegated dramatically yesterday. The 15th team, Westerlo, who won their final game, their season is now over, which is a bit weird. They've saved themselves with a final day win in the regular season. And because of the changes in the system, there's one team whose season finishes on March 13th while everyone else gets to play
a few more
games.
So they play no more games? They're literally done.
They are finished. They can have the biggest party ever, having you know, saved themselves gloriously. And yeah, the top six is going to be pretty interesting because it's six good teams who'll play each other home and away over 10 matches. And just to make it even more interesting, sure, why not? The points are halved at the end of the regular season for the teams.
I mean, what else are you going to do?
So the points are halved. So the playoffs are going to start with Bruges 2 points ahead of Ghent, 4 points ahead of Anderlecht. The European places are interesting as well because there's a team from the top six who will play a team from the mid-table playoffs at the end of the season in a two-legged playoff, of course, for the final Europa League place. Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. And a big one from yesterday as well. Standard Liège missed out on the playoffs. Now, big team, massive team to miss out, but they were bottom after 11 games. So they've had such a weird season. They got themselves back into a great position. They were in sixth place going into the final day away to Mechelen. They had a player sent off after 11 minutes. They lost 4-0. Just a disaster for Standard and for Victor Valdez, who had a pretty poor game yesterday, it has to be said. And he'll be hoping to redeem himself if he gets the chance in the cup final against Bruges next week.
So complicated. But thank you for breaking it down, Mark. Really appreciate it.
I can break it down even further if you want. You know,
No.
Give me a few more minutes. Yeah.
Mark, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
Last Thursday, I was lucky enough to be at Anfield for the Europa League game between Liverpool and Manchester United, working for Setanta. And Liverpool, of course, 2-0 winners on the night, Sturridge with a penalty and Roberto Firmino with a second. The atmosphere was very special indeed, and that was a recording I did of the version of You'll Never Walk Alone before kickoff at Anfield. Chris, what do you think's get? You were also commentating on the game.
Yeah.
What do you how do you rate Manchester United's chances?
I think if it was 2-1, they'd have every chance at Old Trafford. I think the atmosphere at Old Trafford will be fantastic. It's maligned unfairly, actually, sometimes, I think.
European nights, it is great.
It's very special. And the whole 2-0 is very hard. And, you know, United didn't play well enough at Anfield. Louis van Gaal admitted that. I know Paul Scholes was particularly scathing on BT Sport. They have to get the first goal, because if Liverpool score, United have to score four, and that's not going to happen. I think if I was Liverpool, I'd set up to attack United I don't think you would. Yeah, because if they score almost at any stage in the game.
Exactly, that's a good point. I think Liverpool will score at Old Trafford ultimately.
For all of Liverpool's dominance in the first leg, and David De Gea, by the way, he is unbelievable. I didn't think it was a penalty. That did change the complexion of the match.
Well, it's even hard to tell from the replays.
Yeah.
So my view on contentious decisions is, if it's even hard to tell from the replays, you just go with the referee's original. You have to go with the referee's original decision. And the fact Liverpool got that penalty was irrelevant. It could have been 4 or 5. From my view, I couldn't, and I didn't have a monitor in front of me to see a replay. You couldn't really tell. And even from the replays, it's a bit like a bit wishy-washy, maybe.
It's absolutely 50-50. That's why I...
But did he have help from his assistant on that side?
Well, because he took a long time. The assistant didn't do anything. I wonder if somebody else somewhere...
So in that corner of the pitch, maybe you had the... Did you have the fourth official, assistant and referee?
Yeah, you would have done. Between them? Because it was a good 2-3 seconds before he gave it.
It was strange how quiet Memphis Depay was,
European nights, he's been... better. He has played very, very well against the type of opponents, no disrespect to the Eredivisie, that he was playing week in, week out last season. A lot of people, they wonder if, his first season, you judge him how he plays next year. Same with Martial, in a way, who has been much better, I think, than Memphis. It'll be a great occasion at Old Trafford, and United have absolutely to go for it from the off, because they need 2 goals at least.
Borussia Dortmund against Spurs. I don't think either of us see Tottenham turning that one around. And I think the consensus is that Pochettino made a big mistake. Don't play that team before playing Aston Villa. I think he's a wonderful coach, and he's going to be a great manager and move on to a bigger club as well than Spurs. But ultimately...
We've upset some Spurs fans.
Well, he made a mistake, and that's his first major mistake as manager, probably, isn't it? In terms of personnel, he's got everything pretty much right.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I was disappointed with the team selection. If Dortmund were in the Champions League, they would be behind Bayern and... Barcelona is.
Would they be winning the Premier League? I mean, you put for that.
Yeah, this season they would. Yeah, I just think as soon as you saw the teams, you just thought, well, Royce Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan are going to run right, and they did. It was partly the fact that it was Villa, I think, on Sunday that made
That's
the
my
team
problem.
Selection.
That's my problem.
Because I mean, I reckon you and I, if we with 9 mates, might be able to beat Aston Villa at the moment. But that was the thing. But if they get top three, I think that's minimum now to qualify automatically.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sure they will. But
if they win the Premier League, no one will ever mention that Dortmund game
again.
So it doesn't matter.
Greatest season in Tottenham's history.
I was speaking to a Dortmund fan in Germany at the weekend, and he is so excited by the prospect of winning the Europa League. I mean, Pep Guardiola said Dortmund can catch us in the Bundesliga title race. It's very unlikely, let's be honest. And the fact that Dortmund have never won the competition, they last lost in the final, in 2002, the Feyenoord final, Pierre van Hooijdonk, free kick masterclass. And they were the first German club to win a European title, the Cup Winners' Cup. They're absolutely desperate to win this competition. The one team that he was worried about, this Dortmund fan, was not Liverpool. It was Sevilla.
There we go.
Now, Sevilla obviously have won it 2 times in a row. And at the moment, they're playing Basel. So what's the status of that tie, Chris?
Oh, well, they got a 0-0 result at St Jakob Park, which hosts the final. So they'll hope to be back there in a couple of months' time. They've not been great away, actually, in Europe. But at home, they're excellent. And 0-0, you'd back them to go through. So far, it's just been the way, isn't it? Sevilla knocked out the Champions League and then they win it. I think everyone in this country, it's written in the stars that Dortmund are going to play Liverpool in the final, but they might draw each other if they go through. They might draw each other on Friday in the quarterfinals. But Sevilla, they just know how to win it. They love the competition, no surprise. They've won it more times than anybody else. And they're it looks like we might have 3 Spanish teams in the last 8, because Athletic, Bilbao lead Valencia, so that's 1 Spanish team. Villarreal are 2-0 up against Leverkusen, and you'd back them again if they score away. Leverkusen have to score 4. So you could have 3 Spanish teams, which just goes back to that whole English malaise about the Europa League. If you've got teams in other leagues that are fighting for top 4, for cups, for titles, and they play full-strength teams... Well, where's the difference?
It's quite funny that to knock out one of the Spanish teams from the Europa League this year, they have to play each other.
Yeah.
Like Bilbao have to knock out Valencia or vice versa. I do wonder about the value of the Europa League to English clubs. I wonder if that will change, because with the Premier League money, is the Champions League money so valuable to them? And suddenly will the value of trophies and actually winning things increase? I don't know. I might be wrong, but I would love to see an attitude change.
If Tottenham were to get to the final and win it, their fans would absolutely love it. We were in Amsterdam when Chelsea beat Benfica.
Yeah, that was a good night.
I mean,
they
Chelsea fans had the time of their life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what sport's about. It's about winning trophies, isn't it? And it would still go down as one of Tottenham's greatest nights if they won the Europa League. You know, they won it a couple of times before. But I also wonder if Fenerbahce might have a say. As a club, they have players like Van Persie, like Nani, who we know here, Bruno Alves, whether those players might really turn up on the European stage. They lead Braga 1-0. Can't see many teams going to Istanbul in the quarterfinals and getting anything in the home leg.
Having a very good time at all. So as things stand, the teams going through it would be Villarreal, Lazio, Bilbao, Liverpool, Shakhtar, Sevilla, Fenerbahce and Borussia Dortmund. Not bad. Last day, if it does stay light. And the draw for both Champions League, Europa League on Friday.
Yeah,
is that
Friday.
Right, for the quarterfinals?
11 UK time Champions League, 12 UK time Europa League.
Okay, that's all we've got time for on the podcast this week. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes and we'll be back next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.